Good evening, everybody. This is Julia Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour, and today is November 20th, 2015, and I've got Shonda Garrison here. I keep wanting to call you Snyder because I have for so long, but Garrison here. Say howdy.
Hello.
And we're speaking to you live because we can now. And trying to think what we've got going on. It is definitely fall here in the Ozarks. We're going to give you a little weather broadcast. It's getting cool. And
very windy.
Yes, it is windy. And it's supposed to, let's see, the temperatures. It was nice today, and they're supposed to plummet tomorrow. So if anybody's got some warm weather they'd like to send us, please do. Or if you want to have sympathy for us, plummeting temperatures tomorrow. Okay, so there you go. Let's see, we have some classes coming up in January. Are the QHHT, we have level twos and threes coming up in Burbank, California, as well as Peru. And that'll be in February.
February, right?
Yep. Yeah, February. So you can check online at DoloresCannon.com and QHHTOfficial.com. And we also have an announcement coming up Monday about a new program that we're starting that will be in both of those locations, but we're not going to share it yet because that's a surprise. So Monday, be looking for that. We'll be making an announcement. It'll be an email blast as well as a post that'll be coming out. So now I want to give the toll-free number that you can call in if you have any questions for our guest tonight. So that is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. Okay. Now our guest tonight is not new to us. He's been with us before. But I'm still going to have him, but he's very special to us anyway.
You're very kind.
Anyway. Anyway, you're still special. The reason, I'm going to do a little intro on you still, Guy. Our guest tonight is Guy Needler, and so happy to have you on, Guy.
Thank you very much.
And bless your heart. I know we were wanting to have you last week because your book, Origin Speaks, has been out for a little while, but we've been... You know, you've been gallivanting, I've been gallivanting, and we've been having trouble getting the two of us together to do the show, and all over the world, and so it's a matter of getting the two, you know, getting you to stop, and me to stop, and getting us to be able to be here, and I think where were you last week? We were trying to...
I was in a place called Logitech in Slovenia.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the new states of the old Yugoslavia.
Yeah, and it was going to be like... an ungodly, and even more ungodly hour than it is right now there for you. And it was like, no. Bless your heart, you were willing to do it, but no. We can't do that to you. And the way it is right now, I think it's, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning for you?
It's 1 a.m. here. There's 6 hours difference between Central time and British. Greenwich Mean Time now, because there's no daylight saving.
Yeah. And you're so sweet to do that. You're so
Thank
sweet.
You.
And I hope you stay awake.
I'll be okay. Yeah, okay. I'll just sleep in tomorrow morning. That's okay.
Oh, okay, well, that'll be good. That'll be good. Anyway, that's what we wanted to do. That's, you know, because normally we try to get you on pretty soon after the book is out. But that's been it. You know, it's just all the running around. You know, you're so busy anymore. My goodness. You've been doing a lot of classes all over the world.
Yeah, well, I've worked out this year. I've done, where?
See? That's what I mean.
India, obviously America, UK, obviously. China, Slovenia. I've got a workshop in Zurich planned the first month of next year.
Wow.
And of course, we're doing other stuff as well. So, and it's very interesting. You mentioned that you've had lots of winds, in Arkansas. We've got lots of winds here, very windy, and the temperature's dropping as well. Now, isn't that bizarre? We've got the same weather pattern.
It is. I noticed that before, that we have very similar weather patterns. I think we're on a similar jet stream or something.
Yeah, possibly. And the other spooky thing is, I'm going to Peru as well in the last 2 weeks of March, for 2 weeks. Not on a workshop, or just on a holiday and to experience the energies and the different things that are there. So you're going to Peru, literally a few weeks beforehand. It's quite an interesting piece of duality there.
Very interesting, very interesting. Are you going to be at Machu Picchu?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You can't go there without doing that, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we're going to do the NASCAR lines. We're not going to fly because I believe it's not particularly safe. I think they've had a few accidents in planes there. So we're going to go to some of the vantage points on the mountains to see the NASCAR lines. And we're going to do the Inca Trail as well. So it'll be quite an interesting opportunity to feel the energy surrounding the area and hopefully log into to what's there and get some more information about what's really going on around us. Oh, my camera's just dropped off.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be so cool. Well, very cool. So there's got to be some reason that Shonda's going as well, so that all three of us will end up there in such a close proximity in time.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something special going on, clearly.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Because that has been coming up a lot lately. And, I mean, over the last probably couple of years, Machu Picchu just kept coming up. It kept coming up. And then finally, this one practitioner, she just had connections there. And she just, it really started coming up the last few months. She's like, I think we need to do a class there. And it's like, well, okay, fine, if you insist.
Why not?
Yeah.
Twist my arm behind my back and I'll go.
Exactly. So it's just finally time. So yeah. There's something...
Yeah, but again, it's interesting because, I mean, for the last 3 or 4 years, I've had the same feeling about going to Peru. Mm-hmm. And then when my new partner, Celia, said that she's got a plan to go, I said, I'm going. There's no question, I'm going.
There you go.
So we booked up and it's all ready to go, basically. It's just waiting to get on that plane.
Absolutely. So we'll be planning some kind of a tour. We don't have it all coordinated yet, but we'll be doing something. We'll get somebody to coordinate a tour alongside of the clash, so if people want to do a tour as well, we'll be doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like a really good educational, fun, and expansive thing to do. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, let's tell people a little bit about yourself. I know you've been on before and a lot of people know you, but just the short and abbreviated version about how you came up through the ranks and everything, because it's, you're not the typical woo-woo, metaphysical
still
person.
Woo-woo, not typical.
You are woo-woo, but not typical.
Yeah. I think I've been woo-woo all my life, actually, if I look back at it. I mean, really, I was like everybody else up to a certain point in my life, and I started to get involved in metaphysics. I was just thinking, some of my first metaphysical events that happened around me started when I was 4 years of age. I was just thinking back when they started. 4 years of age, I started to experience my first things, yeah.
Okay.
And then I got involved with a gentleman I used to work with, and he gave me a number of books about metaphysics and how to meditate. And that kicked me off. And I started to meditate avidly until my late teens, when I had an interesting waking meditation where I was visited by four entities in robes who explained that what I was doing was right and what I was experiencing was right and what I was researching, it was right, but it was a case of not the right time for me right now because I had to learn more earthly things. So the next, blimey, what would that have been, 20 years onwards, I just became the average person. Met my first beautiful wife, and we got married. We had spent a lot of money and did a lot of work on rebuilding an old cottage. I became very career-minded and very sort of academically minded as well, and became... just went into the typical sort of material world routine. And then about 1999, I was reintroduced to metaphysics to a friend who introduced me to Reiki. I then went into learning energy healing techniques that Barbara Brennan had introduced through one of her first generation students. And within the same time frame, I went to Sweden to see a friend and received a, what I can only describe as being a rather profound awakening process as a result of meditation in a rather special area. And since then, the healings went crazy and things happened that shouldn't happen, supposedly, and started to channel information. And the channeled information started to get recorded, and that eventually turned out to be the first book, The History of God. And the other books, Beyond the Source, Books 1, Books 2, Avoiding Karma, and now The Origin Speaks, followed on in rather quick succession, actually. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind tour.
Yeah. Well, and then, but, you know, your material is just so expansive, and it just kept getting so deep. Like, you know, Mom was always so funny about how she described it. It was just like such deep material and everything. I always like to describe it as mom's material was the deep end of the pool, and yours is like the ocean. it just drops off the deep end. So
yeah, but I'm sure in the future there's going to be somebody else who's going to have the same level of expansivity from what I've done, obviously.
Yeah, and that's where I would like to, you know. I'd love for you to start talking a little bit about the origin. I'm sure you have to kind of preface it a little bit about some of the other material before you get into it, probably. Yeah. But that's what I was wondering, is because is there, like, what's beyond the origin? Whoa. Did they allude to anything beyond the origin?
If I very quickly describe that the origin is everything that there is, and even in Hindu texts I found out later that they said that there's something beyond God, beyond our creator. God is a very difficult word for me to use, because it relates the word and the experience to a religious context rather than an experiential context. And so I find that difficult to use that word, but I have to sometimes because people expect you to use it. But to find out that our creator was created by something else, much bigger, a much bigger entity, was quite bizarre and quite interesting. And it happened within the same sort of time frame as the writing and the channeling of the information for the first book, The History of God. And it became a very interesting and compelling thought process that at some point I would have a dedicated dialogue with this entity, which was absolutely immensely huge. When I tapped into the energies of the source, which at first were only a small aspect of it, and clearly they're still only a small aspect, because if you're tapping into something which is infinitesimally large and experience everything that it's experienced and all its creations of experience, you just blow your mind as a human being. So we're always protected in this sort of work. But to find out quite early on that there was something else created, it was quite compelling. And so I sort of vowed that I would write a book that was basically me talking to the origin about what it is. And the origin is just vast tract of sentient energy that is still trying to understand itself, and has only recently started, and that's why it created the source entities with who, and our particular source entity created us. But you say, is there something beyond the origin? I would say that there's nothing beyond the origin per se, because there is, as far as even the origin understands, there is only the origin. However, in terms of its understanding of self and that sphere, And therefore the sentient volume of what it is, as its understanding itself, then if that acts as a barrier, then what is beyond it is more of itself, but that more of itself is unmapped and just not understood right now, because it's still mm-hmm. busy trying to understand its own backyard, you know, and it doesn't even understand that yet. And so it's a massive task for itself, which is a completely, what did it ask me to call itself? Polyomniscient, sentient area of self-awareness. You know, which means it's much bigger than just sentient or omniscient. It's like polyomniscient, which means many times. And so my understanding is that there will be a book called Beyond the Origin at some point.
Wow. Okay. So like when you came in on it, so it's in a stage of just beginning to understand itself?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And although my initial understanding was that this energy went through a number of different stages of going from just energy doing nothing to energy coalescing together, the energy wanting to coalesce together, the energy that created a level of intelligence through this ever-increasing mass of energy, to going through intelligence to sort of minor self-awareness, to full self-awareness, to consciousness, to sentience, eventually. And I believe in the book, towards the end of the book, I think there's about 20, between 21 and 23 stages that an energy can go through to become sentient. It finally became sentient and then started to trying to understand itself, realized that when it was experiencing itself, learning from those experiences and working with them, it gained something called evolution, that we call evolution, which from its perspective is only a minor understanding of how it progresses. But it tried to accelerate that by creating copies of itself, so to speak, and placing those copies outside of the sphere of its then extremely limited area of not so polyomniscient sentient self-awareness, as it were, and giving them the same options for, shall I say, awakening, becoming self-aware that it had. But that experiment failed, because how can even the origin create something which is supposed to copy itself if it doesn't know what itself is or how big itself is? It's one of these things which is like doomed to failure. And so it regathered that energy and decided to recreate smaller beings, which I now know are the source entities. And I'll finally get more about these things as well as we speak, because there's much more depth to it than I've been led to understand. But it created these entities, gave them the opportunity to become self-aware in their own right, in their own time, and then told them, then he gave them a reason to be. Because one of the things that you found out about its first experiment was, because it didn't give them a reason to be, they sort of failed, they collapsed, they sort of almost like committed energetic suicide, they started to flourish and then imploded and all sorts of various different things. And he also found out that there's something very special about being the first. So being the first is a special thing. It's like there's an absolute need for that energy to survive as a sentience. You know, when he gains this sentient level where the sentience is the beingness, not the energy itself. The sentience can move around the energy, and the energy is just a vehicle that it can use. And so there's something special about being the first that allowed it to survive, but its creations that it tried to create as copies of itself to not survive, and therefore its other creations, which were, shall I say, smaller versions that were subservient to itself, to be successful and continue in their existence. So there's a whole bunch of things that I don't understand that I'm going to have to ask. I'm going to have to ask questions about later.
All about the questions. Well, I was just thinking, was it maybe the copies were, you know, just making copies, and you put something outside of yourself, then you can observe. It's like by then being outside of yourself, you can observe yourself. Because it's sometimes it's easier to see something outside of yourself than within.
Yeah, that was part of the understanding, and it was the other part of this understanding was quite simple. It wanted to accelerate how it evolved, and the only way it could do it was to try to copy itself. And when it's like, how do you copy something which you don't understand? How can you copy something we don't know how big it is? And so the origin was quite clearly in error in its thought processes. As a being, as an entity, it's even now it's extremely young in its state of existence, and so then it was even younger. So it's a bit like trying to make a cake when you're 1.5 years old.
And so how did the origin begin?
How did it begin?
Yes.
That's the part of the first. That's the first part of the book, because it goes into the start of how the origin became the origin, how it became in existence, and what I found really quite interesting. And this question was asked by one of the guys who works with me in Slovenia, Matias, who's my sort of agent. But also he's a very close friend now. He asked me the question last year when I finished The Origin Speaks. He said, what was the most profound thing that came out of the book for you? And I thought, I've just got off an airplane, I'm in your car, and I'm going to run a workshop, and you're asking me this.
Don't you love when people do that? You want me to use my brain?
Don't give me a chance to sit down with a coffee, will you? So I thought, well, what was the most profound thing? And so I sort of mentally scanned the manuscript, and it suddenly dawned on me the most important thing that came out of it was that the origin itself was created, or should I say the opportunity for its existence was created, and that there was something else in existence before the origin.
Yeah, because where did it come from?
Yeah, well, that something else was a function of its structure. And you may have heard me talk about event space, which is like an independent, almost intelligent function of the space that's within the source. But it's within everything else. It's within all the other sources. And it's a function of, and as far as the origin knows, it's a function of its own area of understanding of itself, this other volume of itself. And it goes beyond as well. So it's a complete function of the structure. The origin explained it in this way. It said that the event space started to become intelligent, self-aware, conscious, and then almost became sentient. It almost became the dominant sentient energy or being to occupy this vast tract of totally understandable and unfathomable energy that can become intelligent, etc. But it realized, because event space being event space, it creates the parallel conditions that we know as parallel universes, whether they're localized, globalized, galaxy-sized, or universe-sized. And so it saw within its own space, so to speak, a particular event space where there was another energy, another level of sentience that would become dominant, and that would become a significantly more complete and more, what's the word for it, appropriate or even successful level of sentience that it as event space could become at any point in its potential possibilities. And so knowing that it was going to place itself in a lesser position, it sacrificed its own sentience by removing those other event spaces that would allow it to become sentient in favor of this much bigger being that was going to be created, this much bigger, more complete, more appropriate being that was going to become part of and therefore become this energy and sacrifice itself in lieu of promoting the event space that allowed the origin to become, as it were. And the information from the origin suggested that event space almost destroyed itself in the process, because to do it, it had to sacrifice almost all of those event spaces that led towards its becoming sentient in any way, shape, or form. And to wipe out all of those to allow just the basic level of intelligence that it had to continue, so that the function of event space would still be maintained within the structure of that which was destined to be the origin and its smaller counterparts, the sources, and therefore one of the source entities, us, in lieu of this bigger piece of sentience actually having the free right, the free road, the freeway totally empty for it to become sentient in its own right. And so really it was event space that having the opportunity to become sentient, realize that a much bigger being, much more appropriate, much more complete being could exist if it only sacrificed itself, which it did. And therefore, event space dropped down the sort of level from being almost sentient to being conscious to being merely intelligent, to allow the energies that were destined to be the origin to be and become the origin. And that's an amazing thought process. It's an amazing thing to experience when it was all described. And that for me was the most amazing piece of information to come out of the Origin Speaks, the fact that it was created by literally the energies that form part of its structure because they became intelligent and almost sentient before it. Yeah. It's bizarre, isn't it?
It is bizarre, yes.
Yeah. I mean, how many human beings, for instance, would sacrifice themselves for something else that was better than them? Not many. No. But there are clearly times in our history where that happens. But in real terms, it's a bit of a tough cookie to bite, isn't it? You know, do I sacrifice myself for the betterment of this, or do I just continue and become the dominant sentience, knowing that something much bigger and much better could have occurred? And so, yeah, it must have been for event space. So, I mean, I'm going to have to try and communicate with the origin to try and go back into that area within this book I'm going to call later, which is going to be called Beyond the Origin, to just to discuss these things which are sort of outside of the current understanding, albeit minuscule as it is. And get some more reasonable thoughts behind it.
Yeah. Mm. Oh my goodness.
It's at this time that the listeners should go and get a good stiff coffee.
Absolutely. These are really big questions, really deep questions. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Get some stiff coffee.
the interesting thing is that some of the people I work with. Setting up the workshops and being involved in readings and the healings, or just corresponding to me via the website, via emails, or via the rather young forum I've set up, or even just some of the blogs. Some of them understand it, and so it's really appropriate that this information gets out there and people can pull it. Yeah, can pull it in and start to explain it in more human terms. So if I can understand it and others are starting to understand it, then there's no reason why the rest of the world can't understand it.
Well, like I've always said, I understand why you were able to get it, because your brain, I mean, you had your engineering background. That's why you got it first off, and you were able to understand these concepts so more easily in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then you were able to bring it in and explain it, and then now it's for the rest of us to try and grasp the concepts.
But also on top of that, I mean, I've learned a lot over the last, I suppose, since I've been doing the workshops, which I started in January 2012. So we're almost 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, almost 4 years of workshops of working on that. And obviously communication as a result of the Origin Speaks being, not the Origin Speaks, the History of God being published by Ozark has led to me to understand that I've got to learn to explain things in different ways, different modalities, different viewpoints, using different information, so that it's not just people with an engineer's mind can understand it, but it's people who have different backgrounds, like an artist's background or a medical background or a completely academic background, could also start to understand it as well. So that's one of the things I'm learning to do is really give people the opportunity to understand as a result of me explaining it in different ways, and others helping in that respect as well, because there's people out there who understand it, who are able to give a different sort of root into the level of understanding and explain the same information without losing the content, but in a way that other people could understand, and in a way that I would probably wouldn't be able to myself, for instance, because it's not probably one of my areas of specialism in terms of that level of understanding and levels of explanation.
Yeah, that is the challenge. I mean, that's why I think they've said before, that's why they give a lot of the similar material to many different people, to one, to bring in, and then two, to write, is because they're able to put it and assimilate it in different ways so that people can get it. And then they give it to us in different ways. I've always thought it was interesting how the two of us have gotten, we get this, we have similar visuals, you know, but we relay it in different ways. And so, but that's for that reason, because we have different ways that we deliver the material.
Yeah. And one of the things I've noticed with certainly with my workshop, and you must see it with the QHHT workshops, is that people have different modalities of picking information up.
Yes.
They either visualize things, or they hear things, or they know things, or they feel things, or they have states of beingness that they go into. And I've noticed that these same things are available to people not only in the workshops but also outside in the outside world. And so using those methods or trying to use those methods in broadcasting the knowledge is also important as well.
Absolutely. That's what I'm always telling them. You know, whatever avenues you have here in this 3D world, you know, of receiving information, that's how you have it in this other world too. I mean, how many ways do we receive information in this world?
Multiple ways. And it's interesting that we talk about how many different ways, and the number of people I end up communicating with for readings or healings where they have children who are have this supposed attention deficit disorder, which I don't like to use, which we're not logging into the child. They're one of the indigos, crystals, rainbow, you know, children, or they're a hybrid of any of those three.
Yeah.
You know, as a, you know, hybrid of crystal and rainbow, or indigo and crystal, or they're a hybrid of all three together, and they're communicating with their
children.
Parents. Yeah, they're not children, really, are they? They're sort of advanced beings. But they're communicating not just on the spoken word or the sign language that we use. They're communicating on lots of different energetic levels, and so they're not. So their hyperactiveness or their sort of tantrums that they throw isn't to do with just some strange disorders, because they're getting frustrated because we're not talking to them properly.
Like you're saying, I loved how you did it. You said attention, supposed attention deficit. It's probably not. It's not that. It's hyper attentive. their attention is on so many different levels. You know, they're paying attention on so many different levels. It's frustrating them.
I suppose it's like waiting for an old computer to log into the internet.
Exactly. Really, they're waiting for us to catch up.
Yeah. And they use these. A computer, you know.
Yeah, we're on dial-up and they're on super speed, supersonic speed.
Fiber optics, that's right. And it's the same thing with understanding the, you know, the greater reality when the information that comes through from the source and from the origin. And other people who are fortunate enough to be able to dial into, should I say, this information in the various different ways or modalities that they have, is that we, as we start to work with this energy more, and we start to understand more things, and we use it, we start to move up the frequencies. So we start to ascend the frequencies, and as we do that, we gain more functionality, because as we go up the frequencies, there's more functionality associated with what we can do. We experience more content of our environment, and as we do that, we start to build upon this skill set. We move up the frequencies. We get access to more functionality, and we experience more things, and we become more expansive as a result of it. As we become more expansive, we can understand more, we start to move back up the frequencies again, because we become more capable, more functionality, more expansiveness, and so we start to spiral upwards to the point where we can start to experience much more of our environment, looking around me now, than than we would do if we were totally ignorant of the opportunity to experience higher frequency or levels of the environment that are only available to us as a result of our own personal ascension.
Okay, that's a really good perspective. I like that.
And so, again, with the Origin Speaks, what I've noticed is that there's only a few individuals who can dive straight into that book. They tend to have to go through either Dolores books and other sort of books as well, or start at the History of God and then go through Beyond the Source Book 1, Book 2. Avoiding Karma is a completely standalone book, so that doesn't really count, although it helps. But then again, when they go into the Origin Speaks, because they've had this history of my own growth, as it were, being illustrated in the books, and also the growth that they can experience by reading Dolores' books, your books, and other books that are out there by other authors, by the time they've got to the Origin Speaks, they're fully kitted up. They've moved up the frequencies and they've become more expansive to the point where they can understand the text. And what I've also understood is that when people are ready for these books, they jump out at them, they buy them, they become suddenly aware of who and what you are. And I've noticed quite an interesting increase in interests in my work through the website, through the blogs and the small forums I'm getting set up. Certainly over the last 6 or 7 months, it's like all of a sudden there's like the exponential curve is starting to go up, and it's beautiful to watch, and it's beautiful to understand and be part of, and it's humble to be able to be part of the process as well.
Well, and then that's showing you the shift.
Yeah, there's a huge shift. Although right now I believe what I'm feeling is we're sort of moving down a little bit, because we do have, although we have this gradual movement upwards in terms of our ascension process within the frequencies, mm-hmm. and how we all become aware and awake in our own way, we do have these little ups and downs, sort of either side of this average line, and I think we're just coming to another sort of down period before we start to go back up again. So. We'll be starting to accelerate again quite soon. The down period being illustrated by some of the things that are happening in Syria, for instance, the refugees and the other sort of areas of fundamentalist activity that is only really being delivered to us as a milestone for us to look at and say, actually, we shouldn't be behaving like this. We should be more loving individuals and helping each other out and helping each other to live in an equal way. And the fundamental side of it is, and the terrorist attacks are simply just a way that we start to work together globally, thinking in one way globally, and therefore helping us all ascend in a way globally, also affecting these other locally low areas as well. So even though we think these things are horrific and abhorrent, there's a function behind it to make us all focused and think in the same way.
Remember
who we are, and that this isn't necessary, and that's it. And it brings us all out, of our boxes, makes us all think in the same way, and all send loving thoughts to those areas of the world which are struggling, and then we all move up together, and that automatically brings these other guys as well up. So even though they're part of the lower frequency activity, they naturally get pulled up as well. So even they will start to work in a caring and loving way eventually as well. So it's all part of it.
It's grand play.
Yeah. So we want more books of more expansiveness. To help us move forwards.
Absolutely, yeah. We all chose to do. We all chose to play here.
We all chose to be.
Well, these workshops that you're teaching everywhere, what are they all about?
Well, basically, a friend of and my late first wife said, "Why don't I teach people to do what I do?" This was September 2011. I was in an airport going on holiday, and I thought, oh boy, How do I do that?
Yeah, it's like, can I? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How do you do that? Yeah.
So it pulled me right out of my comfort zone. Right in the deep water, where even I couldn't stand up and breathe. And I thought, well, how do I do it? And I literally sat down and wrote like a script to explain how I initially came to my own level of understanding and a robust method that was the last of the structure I started to use. Because I don't use structure. Personally, I don't use structure now. I just go to where I need to go to. There's a link that's already there. And so I created a workshop that used the fastest of those structured methods to teach people to experience what I experience, whilst also understanding primarily the absolute basic foundations of how it works. And so rather than teaching them the fast route, I've taught them how to understand and work with the basic building blocks of how to get there. And so the workshops are split into three levels. There's level one, which takes the student through the point of understanding the basics, being given physical feedback, because when we go to the first seven levels of frequency, which are affecting the gross physical and spiritual physical, or the astral parts of our human form, we do get physical feedback generally of a number of different genres at each of these different levels. And so we know we absolutely get experiential knowledge to say we are going up these frequencies and we're experiencing different things. And so the individual has personal experience, and also I teach them to feel the aura. So they can feel the aura, the three densest different levels, which is the emotional layer and the etheric layer, etc. So it's levels 1, 2, and 3. And so they get physical feedback, and then they can travel using other different methods, by using mental staircases and mental lifts to get up to level 14 in the first day. Then the next day, we reinforce that, but once we know they've got the idea and the understanding of the fundamentals, and they're working with the basics, we start to remove some of those basics. And so we remove the basics to the point where they can move faster and experience more of the different universal aspects of this multiverse that I've been used to moving up and down and working with. And then they have homework to do, and then they come back after a period of months, and they can go to a level 3, where eventually I remove all of the structure, and they can travel to different parts by projecting their consciousness at will, or they are constantly connected. And also, I've been teaching them recently to be able to be consciously in two places at once, here and one of these places, which is what I do when I'm doing the work. And interestingly enough, one of the things I've been doing is saying, well, let's have three places at once or four places at once. And one of the students in Slovenia managed to be in four different locations plus here, all at once. So the class had to do that as well.
Oh my goodness!
And they did it, you know. And this is interesting, because even this function of this level 3 workshop is a new introduction, and the class are doing it. You know, it's obviously the right time to expand them, to stretch them, and they're doing it, and they're receiving and achieving robust, substantial, and permanent connection with Source, and they can get the information and they can go there in a moment's notice, almost like clicking their fingers, and they're there. Whereas in the level 1, when they did it, they had to go through a laborious process, but they had to do that to achieve the advanced side, and it works every time. You know, I think I've taught something like about 500 or 600 people now.
Fantastic.
Probably more like 600 people, at least. And I've not had any failures. There's not been anybody who can't do it. And it's beautiful to see these people go from being, in some instances, and certainly in China, they go from zero knowledge to being really adept.
Wow.
really adept individuals and be able to experience the greater reality and come back with the information and be able to write it down as well. Every one of them has got a different book they can write, because it's, you know, we know how big our own soul system is. So having a, you know, a whole multiverse to themselves, they can go out and get more in-depth knowledge than I've had, which would be fantastic if they do that. Give me a holiday.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that was a major message that I got this last year at the conference. It was just this, it said, it's time to be your own channel. You have got to get your own information. Stop going outside of yourself. You have to get your own information. Make your own connection. Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's it, yeah. And we're all capable of doing it.
Absolutely.
Most important thing is when we do it, it's like a quantum leap, if you want to call it that, because we start to move away from being individualized within the human form and thinking with a human form, with this temporary personality that we call the ego, to actually realizing that that even as individualized beings, we are part of a bigger being, which is our higher self, or oversoul, or Godhead, or true energetic self, whichever you want to call it. And it's that was created by our creator, our source. And when we start to think in that way, we start to realize that we're all part of the same energy. And then we start to think about other people and how they're the same. And then we start to get this snowball of higher frequency or ascension-based thought processes that pull us up and then pull those around us up as well, as we affect them with our energies. So, yeah.
Well, and as all this keeps opening up and we, you know, more and more, we just get more and more sensitive to that, you know, so, yeah. And we realize how much we affect each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And the concepts in the books that Ozark are really doing such a fantastic job in publishing assists in this process. It's a huge task that Ozark through Dolores and yourselves are embarked upon, but the amount of information that's coming out is unbelievable, and it's all mind expanding stuff, and it's all stuff that is becoming, shall we say, more digestible as well, more understandable to us all, and I really do think that, you know, 10, 15, maybe even 20 years ago, some of the stuff we're working with now, we wouldn't have been able to understand or even get anywhere near understanding.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah. our minds couldn't have handled it. No, we didn't have the minds to handle.
No,
that's what
we did.
Always saying. It's not the brains, it's the minds. We couldn't to handle the concepts. Yeah. And we can now. What we can do in 5-10 years from now, what we'll be able to handle.
Oh, 5-10 years.
This book will be nothing. We'll be able to go, why were we making such a big deal out of this?
it'll be a useful doorstop. or coffee mug mess. Yeah. and if that's the case, I would be so pleased that it reaches
you. This is trivial stuff now. And we'll have so much, we'll know what's beyond the origin.
So fantastic. So it's really interesting that even if, you know, we wouldn't have been able to be exposed to any of this either 10-15 years ago. But somebody asked me a question. I was fortunate enough to do a short lecture at Watkins Bookshop in London, in Cecil Court, which is down not too far from Leicester Square, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm not good on the geography of London. But anyway, it's a metaphysical bookshop. It's extremely important, and it sells lots of Ozark books as well, which is fantastic.
It's a great place.
And you know, the questions I was getting there from the crowd, it's a very intimate, it's very small. It's a shop that's so packed with stuff you can only get about 10 or 15 people in there at any one time for a lecture. But the questions that were coming from the people there were fantastic. You know, and they were there, and they were understanding it as well. They understood how to ask the questions. That's a really fundamental thing to have, because it's all right having this knowledge, But if you can't ask the questions to get the information that's between the lines, then there's no point in starting. But it's for interest only then. But some of these guys in the audience were asking some really good questions, you know, thought provoking, mind expanding questions, which was great, absolutely fantastic. I was really pleased with that. I think I talked too much as usual, but at the end of that, we were there well over time. It was very good. They enjoyed it, and they enjoyed the subject that talked about with the Origin Speaks. Yeah,
I'm sure they enjoyed it. Yeah, oh, they're such a wonderful group there. That's such a beautiful bookstore.
I enjoy the energy there. It's got this mixture of just the right stuff if you're just starting to get involved in metaphysics or spiritual work, to the real sort of cutting edge stuff as well. And it's fantastic to be able to go and then see that somewhere can do that rather than just going for the popular stuff, which sells tens of thousands or millions of books. They're prepared to go for the kindergarten stuff right up to the stuff that is expanding the consciousness of the human race. Fantastic place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish there's more like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're very good about what they do. And the whole atmosphere, everything about the place is just, it's perfect. You know, it's got the old English style and everything. It's great.
Yeah.
It looks like it comes right out of Harry Potter, too.
I also sometimes think that Rudolf Steiner is going to pop out one of the corners somewhere, because Rudolf Steiner was one of the guys who was also a great metaphysical leader who was so far ahead of his time, he was almost ignored. But now, of course, his work is progressing in Switzerland because of the Steiner Institute in Switzerland. But you can almost imagine him popping around the corner, in that shop. It's really good. Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
So this book, The Origin Speaks, is the latest book of mine. It's the fifth book. Mm-hmm. It's actually a magic number, you know. I had this feeling I had to get to five books before things were complete, so to speak. I actually know I've got to do 12 books, by the way. and I've got the subject matter for each of those other books. Having just finished my sixth, of course, as well, which is also going to be an interesting discussion for a later interview, I've no doubt. The next six are going to be also as important, I think, but in different ways. I'm going to try and kick off the work on that next book just after Christmas. So I'm having a little rest at the moment.
Oh my goodness, guy.
Although you wouldn't think so, because I'm getting lots of work, lots of sort of one-to-one consultations and things, and I'm having to plan next year's workshops and stuff. So it's still hard work, but I want to get the time set in to start kicking off this seventh book.
Well, let's real quick. I think we just have like a few minutes left. Real quick, tell everybody how they can reach you if they want to.
Yeah, well, they can get me the following website, which is www.beyondthesource, which is all one word, .org. And within that, there's lots of different pages that they can see my videos, they can see the correspondence courses I've written, which for people who can't make the workshops, they can do correspondence courses as well, which are also just as effective, which is brilliant. They can also look at the events page there and see where I'm doing the workshops, what lectures are, and obviously radio interviews such as this one with you, Julia and Chanda. And there's a contact page on there as well, so they go into that contact page and they can find the following email address, which is info@beyondthesource.org, and they can email me there. And also, if they go onto my website and join the forums there, they can communicate with me that way. Or they can answer the blogs as well on that website. And they can ask to join the newsletter as well via the website. So it's a bit of a portal for everything, really. So it's
Making yourself very accessible then.
Yes.
Super.
But the people who get in contact have got some fantastic questions, and it's always interesting to see where people are, where the general populace is going in terms of their own depth of knowledge and experience and willing to learn more. And not only do I learn from the source and the origin, of course, but I also learn from the people asking the questions, because it makes me have to go and channel the information sometimes to get the information back to answer their questions. So I learn at the same time. So it's a win-win situation all around.
Right. Now, you mentioned a while ago that you do private consultations as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So again, for the on the website, there's a couple of pages there that allow you to buy the readings or the healings by using the PayPal link, for instance, but also using the either the blogs, but mainly through the email address. People can contact me through the email address to organise a reading or a healing that way.
Well, fantastic. You're just one busy guy, you know?
Busy, busy, busy.
Yes,
and it's you know, it's 5 or 6 years ago, if somebody had told me I would be this busy doing this work, I would have laughed. But now I'm feeling this is actually starting to look like how I felt my life was supposed to go about 20 or 30 years ago. We're not allowed to see our own stuff, clearly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that, and Dolores knew that. But I've seen little milestones along my life in terms of what I've seen when I was younger. And I'm reaching some of these milestones and seeing the imagery as well. So there we go.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Guy. And this has been wonderful. We've got to go, everybody. So we'll see. We'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you for being here, Guy. Good night.
Thank you.